let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some art.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly sponsored this month by our friends from the Dolphin Theatre. Head to dolphintheatre.org.nz to check out their latest shows and book your tickets. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and check us out on Spotify. Tonight we're catching up with the team from Company Theatre's latest production, Once on Chunuk Beach. We're chatting with author John Reynolds about his latest book, and we're catching up with the effervescent hot dish on their latest production. Now, to kick off the show tonight, here is a new track from an emerging Kiwi artist who reached out to us just this week. Here is Louise Loon with Shapeshifter.
However do you do it? When it comes to deception, you just seem so fluent. And oh, your master-crafted stories are perfectly paired with all your moving top stories.
1, 2, 3.
But your facade just wasn't consistent. The act you put on, it was barely coherent. Say one thing, then move into a different. Go home and listen, I support women. You're a shapeshifter. I forget on you. Lose cover, you point fingers, but your camouflage can only take you so far. That's what you are, shapeshifter. You're so Machiavellian, with your skin changing colors like you're a chameleon. Then just for good measure, you get angry. Go all, get a load of this guy. My God, what an asshole. And then I'm like, no backbone. Why are you so flexible? Gonna always be a woe. Do you think no one would know? You're a shapeshifter. Get on you, lose cover you. Point fingers with you. Camouflage can only take you so far. That's what you are, shapeshifter. Not to sound over dramatic, but I think I call you borderline acrobatic. Cause you're just like the truth you keep bending. So does your back gather from all that twisting and stretching. You're a shapeshifter. I forget when you lose cover, you point fingers, but your camouflage can only take you so far.
Shapeshifter Louise Loon. And Emma, I just love it when Kiwi artists reach out like she did.
I know, it was fantastic. Just to open up the Instagram page and there in the messages was hers.
Brilliant. And it's New Zealand Music Month still, so fantastic. Thank you, Louise. We'll try and reach out and do an interview next month and catch up. But if you've got some new music you'd like to share with us, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. Now, I've been living at the theatre with Adam's family all week, but I did manage to get to Once on Chunuk Beach today, and I'll talk about that a little later in the show because we have them coming on. What have you been up to this week?
Well, apart from rehearsals, I actually went along to Tadpole's opening night of The Queen's Nanny.
I'm jealous. That looked amazing.
It was so good. It was such a great night's entertainment. It's only 90 minutes, no interval. So, you know, you even got a... We were driving away at 9 o'clock and I was home by 9:30, okay. Which was nice.
Yeah. Mm. And stunning cast.
Oh, absolutely outstanding.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Awesome. All right. Well, we're going to crack straight into it. We've got a lot of variety on the show tonight.
We have.
Kicking it off with someone who's had a little bit of a trip down memory lane coming in here tonight, having been once involved with Planet FM back when it was in the basement of the Unitech grounds. We're certainly not in the basement now. Welcome to the show, John Reynolds.
Thanks, Stephen. It was the AUT grounds.
AUT.
Even before it went to Unitech.
Brilliant.
Yes, way back.
And what was your involvement with Planet FM?
I broadcast a couple of talk shows every morning.
Great.
One for the university called Varsity Hour, and then Tertiary Roundup, which I interviewed tertiary people, but I also interviewed politicians and prime ministers and sports people and all sorts of things. It was live,
yeah,
which had its own challenges,
yes,
of course. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we've got you on the other side of the desk tonight, although,
yeah,
you know, if you want to come over here at any point, take control.
Okay.
It probably looks a little different to what,
yes,
I imagine it would have been back in the day.
Much smaller studios, yes.
Yeah.
And passing noise was always an issue, but this is luxury compared with what we did way back then, yes.
Now, you're here tonight to talk about your book, In With Both Feet, but you're no stranger to the arts world in New Zealand, certainly from writing and staging musicals to being an author, but tonight let's focus first of all on your book, In With Both Feet. Tell us about it. What's it all about?
Well, it's all about my life, I suppose, because I was born in New Zealand, but at the age of 22, I got on a boat and went to England and taught over there. I was a qualified teacher.
Right.
But to supplement my income, I played the piano in London pubs around the East End, which was great. This was in the early 60s. And then I bought a Mini and decided I would go and have a look at the iron behind the Iron Curtain.
Wow.
So I drove from London to Warsaw and back. My mother thought she'd never see me again. I was going deep into communist Poland. But in fact, it was an eye-opener, and I used it. I used the experience in writing my subsequent books, living in a communist country which was totally controlled. Now, there was no political opposition or anything like that. And students, I met some students there, and their English wasn't very good. Their German was better because they'd learnt it at the point of a bayonet for 5 years.
Right.
But they would try to explain to me, Russia, we no like you. We no like. They had no other words for it.
Mm.
But their eyes told me that they hated being under Russian control. So the Second World War didn't end for Russia until the Berlin Wall came down, which was interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
When did you return to New Zealand?
I came back in 1968. I went on to Canada and bought a new Chevrolet Camaro. Back then, nobody had new cars in New Zealand unless you had overseas funds. So I was a school teacher on an average wage driving the latest American car. So people still remember that when they meet me. Oh, you were the guy with that car. Yes, I remember driving into the school where I was hired and parking next to the headmaster's Ford Prefect. And, yes. And then I went, I got involved with filmmaking with school children.
Right.
And did a bachelor's degree at the University of Auckland part-time. I then went on to Rhodesia, which was in its final throes. And then from there I went to San Jose State in California, did a master's degree before I came back to New Zealand again. I always come back here.
Hmm.
I've been to many places and worked in many places, but although the money was better in some places, it was never in my mind to stay there.
Right.
I would always come back
there
to New Zealand.
There was always the pull back home.
Always the pull back home, yeah. It's still, I think, the best country in the world, certainly for me, yes. So, and then finally got a PhD at the age of 60.
Lovely.
I've passed over the fact that in Takapuna Grammar I was a second year fifth. So when I got my PhD, my second year fifth year seemed 1,000 years away. No one would have believed, at least it would be, that I'd finally get to that point. But I did.
So when you're writing a book like this, what got left on the cutting room floor, so to speak? Like, how did you decide what goes into the book? Talk us through that.
I wanted a book that would entertain people.
Okay.
Whether they knew me or not. So I didn't want to, then I did this, then I did this, then I did this. Then I've got anecdotes and humour, people I met, conversations I had, comments on some of the places I went to, some of the history there, without going into a long detailed thing. It's not an academic book, but for people who are of an academic mind, they'll find some of it interesting. But people who've read it have said to me, we really enjoyed it. We kept turning the pages, which is the essence of a good book. Mm. If it's a page turner, if people want to know what happened next, then they'll keep reading. And that worked. I've got photographs in it as well, and that adds to it. But no, just incidents that happened to me as I went along, and yeah, people I met, places I went to, yes.
Did you fit it all in, or is there a possibility of book number two? Like, have you gone, I didn't get that in, I didn't get that bit?
No, I think I said all I wanted to say. I mean, there were things I passed over. I mean, there was, you know, like all families, we had issues here and there and issues with friends and so on. But I left all that out. I just thought, no, this is a positive book. I've had a positive life, and I shall put in the positive stuff. Nobody wants to know the grubby little things that happen to the next door neighbour and all that sort of nonsense. No. So there's still a bit of drama in there. Yep. But I don't think, none of my relatives or friends have rung up and said, how dare you?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, haven't done anything like that at all, no.
And how is this different to previous books that you've written?
Previous books have all been novels.
Right.
So this was the first time I'd written about myself. The novels were informed by a lot of my experiences in East Germany, Poland, and later on in Russia. Then in Rhodesia, which was under martial law at one point, South Africa I saw under apartheid. So, and then California, America's a divided country in many ways. So that informed all my writing. But my first book was an imaginary story about New Zealand under German rule. Germany won World War II, and we were ruled by the Germans. We were occupied. And how did that work? What did we do? Did we all resist the Germans? No. Because I saw that in Poland and Czechoslovakia and places. Some people kept their heads down, said nothing. Some people actively cooperated with the power, and some of them resisted. And the same thing happened in my book in New Zealand. That was interesting to read. Interesting. And that got good reviews. I was pretty happy with it.
And you've gone down the self-publishing route for this book.
Yes.
We've noticed a lot, haven't we, in the last few weeks?
Yeah, we're definitely getting
a lot of our guests are self-publishing. There just doesn't seem to be the publishers pumping out the books like they used to.
No.
So many guests saying, you know, if I want my story told, I've got to kind of get out there and do it myself. Is that sort of similar case for you?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You can go to all sorts of publishers and they'll say, like your book, that's very good, but we just don't feel it's our book at the moment. So, and I've got a lot of friends who are self-published. They've just gone that same route. Because you can get a good quality book published by yourself with digital publishing and so on. And so, yeah, the marketing is a hassle. You've got to get out there and sell the book. Thank you for having me on your radio station.
Yeah,
it is. But I do a lot of author talks. I go around and talk to different groups and read excerpts from the book and tell stories about my writing, the places I've been and so on. And that helps the sales along as well. And one day I'll get a call from some fat publisher that says, look, I really enjoyed your book. But in the meantime, I just enjoy the writing and enjoy promoting it.
Yeah. Now, John, I see that of your other novels, two of them you've turned into audiobooks narrated by yourself.
Yes.
How do you decide which ones should become audiobooks?
I used to audio narrate books for Blind Low Vision New Zealand. And I took the first book, Uncommon Enemy, the one about the occupation of New Zealand, and said, would you be interested in me reading this? And they said, oh, yes, that'd be fine, yes. And then the next one, which was another crime novel set in Afghanistan, New Zealand, and other parts, they also said, yes, that would be interesting. So at that point, when I'd finished that, I was getting on a bit in years. I'll be 85 in 9 days' time, so getting on a bit. My voice was starting to give out, and so I didn't do any more reading there. But those were the those books I enjoyed reading because there are characters.
Mm.
And if there are characters, you could do the voices. And there were Germans and Russians, and you can do the accents as well, which I quite enjoy. You know, why do you ask me that question? That sort of thing. And yes, although you've got to make sure not all the Germans sound like Sergeant Schultz.
Now, you've written musicals as well.
Yes.
So tell me, where do you think your imagination came from? Like, was it something as a child that you used to play imaginary games and things? Or, you've come up with musicals, you've come up with these novels that are quite different topics. So where do you think that stemmed from?
It's hard to know. I did make some little... My dad made films when we were very small. When we were youngsters, he had a five-pound wind-up Standard 8 camera, and he used to do very short films with the family starred in the roles of cowboys and Indians and that sort of thing. And I took over and started making films, and I guess I started writing scripts, and they worked, and they got up on the screen. And then when we did the first musical, Gary DeVern and I met. Gary did the music, and we decided to write a show called Robin Hood, Outlaw Princess, Robin being spelt with a Y instead of an I, and wrote that and wrote the songs and put music to it, and it was very successful. Where it came from, I don't know. It just happened, and it was wonderful just to sit in the audience and hear people laughing at my jokes and clapping at the songs and enjoying the show. And
well, even at that time, to Robin with a Y and a princess, that was kind of quite ahead of its time.
It was.
From feminist point of view wasn't it?
Absolutely. Most of the shows in schools at that time, if there were any male parts, they were played by girls, because boys didn't play parts in musicals. So we thought, we'll have the girls as a central theme. They will be a band of outlaw women. And this was done at Westlake Girls High School, but we needed the sheriff and his men. And so they approached Westlake Boys, and they went to the first 15 and said, would you like to take part in a musical with the girls?
Oh.
Well, apparently thousands were killed in the rush.
Love it.
Yeah, that worked. That combination worked very well.
And that combination still happens
now.
Yes. You know, with their annual shows.
Yeah. Yes. Look, it's taken me a little bit of a flashback to my teenage days, because I was the manager of Playhouse Theatre when I was about 19, and
okay.
I can remember you guys coming through with, I think it was Sink the Warrior and Starblaze.
Yes, that'd be right.
Was the memory, because yes. I can remember jumping on the piano at one point with Gary, because you were short somebody and needed something, and I'm sure that was the Warrior one. Yeah, fabulous.
Yeah, that
fabulous.
Was great. Well, Shade Smith wrote the Warrior.
Yeah, yeah.
And Gary DeVern wrote Starblaze.
Yeah.
And Shade wrote Starblaze as well. Gary wrote Robin. Yeah. And Starblaze was translated into Czech and put on at the school of Prague.
Wow.
The teacher there spoke fluent English and was a music teacher, saw it, liked it, translated it, and they sent me a CD. I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
No more musicals sitting inside you to write?
I've just finished another one.
Okay.
And that was put on in Australia just recently, called Pirates in Petticoats.
Yep.
And that was about female pirates again, because there were female pirates. A school in Australia that has done all my shows, I sent them a copy of it at the beginning of last year, and they said, to see what they thought of it, he said, can we put it on for the end of the year show? I said, oh, yeah. So Bess and I flew over for it, and it was great. It was just great, yeah. So it's still ticking along, yes.
Brilliant. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a short music break, and then I think Emma John might be a person we need to ask our famous Kick Arts questions of that we haven't asked for a little while, but I feel there might be some stories in there.
Yeah.
Heading now for our music break, time to play fabulous Jenny Smith with a recent release of hers called Already Yours.
Already yours, already yours, what are we waiting for? Can't hold back anymore. And you know that I'm already too deep into this, longing for your kiss, just a brush of the hand and suddenly I miss you every day, the moments you're away, that smile on your face gets me every time, like oh, where did this come from, oh, if we're just playing games for fun, I don't want wanna know, 'cause fuck it all, I'm already yours, already yours. What are you waiting for? Can't hold back anymore, and you know that I'm already yours. You know that I'm already yours. I'm already falling right into you, stuck to you like glue. You know I overdo. How long have I known you? 3 a.m. conversations, we're spilling all our secrets and giving all the reasons we can't sleep. Like, oh, 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 where did my morals go? Oh, 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 I've been waiting for so long, now I can't resist, so fuck the shit. I'm already yours, already yours. What are you waiting for? Can't hold back anymore, and you know that I'm already yours. You know that I'm already yours. Oh, 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 in your room now. Oh, 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 you're moving closer in my heart. Sleeping from my chest into your hands. Oh, 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 where did my cold go? Oh, 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 I've been holding on for so long, now I'm caving in, so kiss me quick. I'm already
Jenny Smith, already yours, and Jenny's always supporting Kick Arts, so we always love supporting her. Now, remember, it is New Zealand Music Month, and Emma, you put a great post up this week.
Yeah, we were just, well, you and I had a discussion about our past musical guests and Kiwi music, so it was a good chance for us to kind of put that playlist up. Hopefully, some of our followers check them out.
Yeah, great options to listen to. Great mix of music. Mm, yeah. All right, back with our guest now, John Reynolds. And I said before the break, talking about our Kick Arts questions, because we haven't asked them for a while. But I think with a book like this, it's really, really appropriate. So here's the first one. If you were to go back and sit your 16-year-old self down before they got in that mini, what advice would you give them, knowing what you know now?
Follow your dreams.
Yeah.
Even if the environment you're in, and I didn't like secondary school, I didn't do well. If you feel that this doesn't fit for you, but you have an idea of what you want to do, follow it.
Mm.
That's why I've called the book In With Both Feet. I didn't just walk into the water very carefully.
Yep.
I jumped in, said, let's have a go. I wanted to go to and see a communist country. So I got in my car and drove to it. Those sorts of things. I went to Rhodesia when it was on its way out. I wanted to see it. My grandfather had played rugby for Rhodesia in 1904 and told me all about it when I was a youngster. I wanted to see it. So I did it. And it's paid off. I'm still alive.
Yeah. Who were the biggest, I guess, people that supported you along that journey?
Probably colleagues that I met at various institutions I worked at, like the university and AUT and places like that. And then I went to Whitecliff College of Art and Design and was academic vice president there. And I was supported by Greg Whitecliff, the late Greg Whitecliff. And, I wound up at SAE, the School of Audio Engineering. Mm-hmm. I had very good support from the principal there to allow me to... We managed to get 2 degrees granted there while I was there, and I felt we could do it. He felt we could do it, so he gave me all the support he could, and that was great. I've had opposition. I've had worked for people that were really nasty. Mm. They're not in the book. I'm not interested. No, I don't. They don't need to be in the book.
Yeah. The book feels like it's a celebration.
It is.
Of the journey.
Very
yeah.
well put.
Yeah.
A celebration. Yep. Some of the nasty people I put in my novels, they don't know that the surnames are in the novels. So that's my revenge. Yes, yes.
So thinking separate to who supported you, who inspired you along your journey?
No one in particular. Certainly Bess, my wife's been a great supporter, because Bess has got a very good track record herself in the arts, and so we met when she directed one of my shows when I was at Teachers College.
Mm.
And so we've supported each other down the years, and that has gone very well. Yeah, and of course working with people of the quality of Gary Devern and Shade Smith, two of New Zealand's leading songwriters, mm. that was great as well. Because they were good to work with. We had difficulties at times. I don't like this song because, but if you listen to other people's opinions, yes, it's your song, but don't just say, I'm sorry, it's my song, I won't take any opinions. Listen to other people. They've often got a lot to say that's valuable. And so I've always tried to do that where I can. It's paid off, I guess. Five musicals and, yeah. So, and six books, I think, is it six books? Yeah.
So, if we were to sneak into your bedroom, that sounds really dodgy, doesn't it? What would we find on your bedside table? Who do you read in your spare time?
I read a great mixture of things. I have a Kindle next to me, and I always read a Kindle before I go to bed. So it'll be sex and death and rock and roll, or biographies, or all sorts of things, depending on my mood. And gather bits from those authors, write down something that's appealed to me, and because in my every chapter of this book, I have a quote from somewhere, from somebody, because quoting other people just helps to flesh it out a bit and gives other opinions as well. So I couldn't say I had a particularly favourite author. I do love John le Carré, but you've got to work at le Carré, I find. You read him slowly and carefully, because it's quite complex. But The Spy That He Came In From a Cold has always been a favourite. And having crossed the Berlin Wall, then, you know, I can just picture Checkpoint Charlie and everything that happened around there at the time, because I was there, so, yeah.
And what sits better with you then? You read a Kindle at night, but I mean, I'm personally a physical book person. I love that feel of a book and turning a page. I've never been able to get used to a Kindle.
Okay. I can do both. I don't have a preference either way. So subscribe to the Herald and read the newspaper in the morning. Hear the paper, feel the paper go over. Do the crossword, not well. But yeah. So you're right, the tactile feeling of paper is lovely as well, yes.
So what's next on the horizon?
I'm just in the process of finishing another novel.
Okay.
Which is called After You've Gone, that's right, named after that famous song from way back. A New Zealand girl winds up in England at the outbreak of World War I and joins the ambulance drivers that drove to World War I to the trenches and brought men back. And she brings a man back who's blind and has lost his memory. The only thing they know about him is because of the pips on his battered battle dress that he's a captain. And she nurses him and they fall in love. But one of the other nurses knows who he is. He's an aristocrat and she's got her hooks into him. And so she contacts his parents to say that he's in this hospital in Belgium. And they send a private ambulance over for him. When the New Zealand girl is at the front collecting wounded, she comes back to find that he's gone. And nobody knows where he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Thereby hangs a tale.
Right.
Right. And so I've finished the first draft. But, of course, a book you revise and revise and read and revise. And I belong to our writing group. We take along and read extracts to them, and they pull it to bits and so on. But I'm pretty happy with the way it's shaping up. So that, hopefully that will be out later in the year.
Later in the year, okay.
After you've gone, yes.
Nice.
I shall give you a buzz and tell you. Look, I've just written another book.
We'll pop it out.
Okay.
And if there was one, when you look back at your career and your journey and, you know, what's in the book, and you can't say meeting Beth because that's cheating, what is one or two of the most standout highlights for you that, you know, if we were to create the movie version of the book, you'd be like, this is where you've got to spend the big budget. These are my best moments.
Walking across the stage at the Auckland Town Hall, having been capped for a PhD.
Yeah, cool.
He put the cap on my head, and I took three steps, and I stopped, and I just thrust my fist in the air, because I thought, I was a second year fifth, and now I've got a bloody doctorate.
Yeah, love it.
And then maybe sitting in the audience in the first musical I'd written, and just hearing the noise around me and the, you know, just the enjoyment from the audience, that would be another
very special
highlight. Yes, apart from marrying Bess, of course.
No, I took that one out of the list just to keep you safe, mate. Yep.
And the birth of two sons, of course, and so on, those sorts of
things. And have they followed in the artistic journey?
One has. He works for Television New Zealand, and he does. In fact, I was at his place today doing some editing. And the other one has become a teacher, and he's deputy principal of a North Shore school.
Great. So,
and has five children to show for it.
Yeah, well, that's creative enough, doing all
indeed,
of that.
Yes, yeah. Well, he's investing in the education system, you see, So, yes.
What would you like people who pick up your book to kind of take away from it?
As I said earlier, always follow your dreams. Mm. Always. Okay. They won't always turn out, but follow them anyway. Don't go to your grave or go to your retirement thinking, I wish I'd done that. Why didn't I do that when they had the opportunity? Now, we all have times in our life we probably wished we'd done something, but if you've got some big dreams, follow them. And see how you get on. It'll give you an adventure. And you can maybe write an autobiography. Yes.
Love it. Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming and chatting with us tonight. In Both Feet. Now it's available in good bookshops and online.
Online. It's on Amazon. And yes. And you can contact me. JBESS@extra.co.nz. I'm very happy to send you an autographed copy of the book, and it'll be worth a fortune when I'm gone. Yes.
Brilliant. Love it. Thank you so much, John, and thank you, Beth, for coming in here tonight, and all the best with your book, and we'll look forward to catching up when you release your next one.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Amazing. Thank you. Taking a music break now while we get our next guest on the phone. Chris Bates has been a little bit quiet for a little while, but he was back and he's released a great cover of the track Still the One.
Looks like we made it. How far we've come, my baby. We might have took the long way, but we knew we'd get there someday. They said, I bet they'll never make it, but just look at us holding on. Still together, still going strong. Still the one I run to, the one that I belong to. You're still the one I want for life. You're still the one that I love, the only one I dream of. You're still the one I kiss goodnight. You're still the one. Together, I'm glad we didn't listen. Look at what we've been missing. They said, I bet they'll never make it, but just look at us holding on.
to hear Chris's voice again.
I know.
It's been a little while. We need to chase him up. So come back, sing and play. He used to play so nice in here.
Yeah, definitely.
So from books about what an amazing life journey though.
I know.
You put all of that together and wow, it's what a book to read.
And a random, like hearing about his novels were quite random topics in a way, weren't they?
Yeah,
the way that he took something that had happened to him and turned it into something fictional.
Yeah, and just to walk into this place and be part of the journey that once got Planet FM its name and number.
Mm.
That's so cool. Mm. Well, from books now to Garters of the Galaxy of Volume 2, we are now going to cross to Star-Lord themselves. Good evening. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a while.
It's been a while, and usually when we have you on here, we're chatting to you as Hot Dish, but you're Star-Lord tonight, so tell us, what on earth is Garters of the Galaxy all about?
Well, Garters of the Galaxy is being put on by Cabaret Coven, so one of the fun themed shows that I'm usually a part of, and what it's all about is we have a mix of performers who are drag performers, and we've got burlesque performers. We have a hoop artist. There might even be a theremin.
A what?
A what?
A theremin.
What's that?
You know, it's this bizarre, spacey instrument. It's what they used for the original Star Trek theme.
Oh, okay. All right.
Go, learn something new.
Yeah. Carry on. Don't let us interrupt.
No. It's all good. I never know who knows what a theremin is, but we have a theremin player.
That's very cool.
Basically, I am going to be taking the audience on a journey through the galaxy because, you know, things are a little bit hard on Earth right now. So, yeah, we'll go find some fun stuff in the galaxy to entertain us.
Cool.
And how many in your show?
How many performers? So there's me, there's Flash Dragon, we have Emma Everson, we have Miss Weeds coming up from Wellington, and Hester Hawthorne as well. I think Dick Slayson, who I know you've had in studio a few times as well. Yes, actually.
That's okay. A decent lineup.
There's even more. There's Carmen Composed, and Fannie McBangers is doing one of the original acts from a show, The Guardians of the Galaxy, that we did 3 years ago.
It wouldn't be a show without Fannie McBangers. Now,
exactly. Names in the industry.
Do you brief your team on sort of the theme, and then it's up to them to create what's coming into it?
Yeah, so we give them an idea of what our theme is going to be. So with Guardians of the Galaxy, I told them, it's like, well, the main theme, obviously, is space and sci-fi. But obviously, if you want to add a little Marvel twist onto it, I will be more than happy. So we have we actually have some MCU acts, and we have a few things from all eras of sci-fi. Like, we have stuff from 60s sci-fi onwards. So I'm really excited about it.
What's your role as Star-Lord? Do you have to try and keep everybody in line and keep this together?
I have to try and keep things running and emceeing and being entertaining because everybody knows I'm the favorite superhero. So.
Love it. And what else is happening in your world since we last caught up?
As Hot Dish, I have been performing just various venues in Auckland. I've been doing a lot of performances as Star-Lord because obviously I've got this show coming up and it's quite big, but I'm also still working on a little webcomic that just wrapped up season one, and I will be debuting season two hopefully later this year, but it takes a while for me to illustrate.
Massive. And who do you think this show sort of appeals to? Who should come along?
Well, it is an 18-plus show, just because we do have a bit of risque acts, but anyone 18-plus who absolutely loves sci-fi or comics, any kind of, like, nerdy thing, but also people who just like the drag community and the burlesque community. Like, you're going to see some really amazing acts. Even if you're not that into sci-fi, it's still going to be really cool.
That's brilliant.
And also, people who like to dress up, we love having our audience dress up.
Is it interactive? Do we need to brace ourselves?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yes. Especially because I'm there. I will be going out into the audience a lot.
Love it. Love it. All right, tell people, where can they get tickets? When's it on? All the important details.
All the important details. So, they can get tickets through iticket.com, or .co.nviz. Sorry, that was the American in me coming out. You can tell I'm not originally from New Zealand. So, they can get tickets through iticket. Just search Gardeners of the Galaxy or Cabaret Coven. And we still have VIP tickets available, which a VIP seat will get you seating in the front two rows, as well as a goodie bag, which we are throwing in a bunch of extras to our goodie bags. There will be stickers of artwork I did about 3 years ago of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And we have an ebook from Jamie Sands. I'm trying to think of what else we're putting in there. We might be putting some prints in. I don't know. I can't confirm that yet, but there's going to be some really cool things in those little beauty boxes. And it is the 23rd of May, so next Saturday at 8 p.m. at Factory Theater in Unihanga.
Brilliant. Next Saturday, 8 p.m. at Factory Theater. Jump onto iticket.co.nz for a night out of Out with Garters of the Galaxy Volume 2. Hey, thanks so much for jumping on for a quick call so we could give you a little plug between guests. And yeah. hope the show goes really well. And we'll catch up with you again when you're back on your next cabaret outing.
Yes, definitely. Awesome.
Awesome. All right, we'll take care. Thank you so much.
You too.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, while we get our next guest in the studio, here's the fabulous Lisa Crawley with New Slang. And this is in preparation for her upcoming event. She's back in Auckland in June, performing at Big Fan on June the 18th. Here is New Slang.
And a curse for this town. We're all in my mouth. Only I don't know how they got out, dear. Turn me back into the pit I was when we met. I was happier then with no mindset. And if you took to me like a girl takes to the wind, would I have jumped from my trees and out of dance like the king of the eyesores? The rest of our lives would have farewell. New slang when you notice the stripes, been dead on your fries. Hope it's right when you die, old and bony. Dawn breaks like a bull through the hole. Never shed a coat, put my head to the wall, and I'm lonely. And if you talk to me like a girl takes to the wind, would I have jumped from my trees and out of dance like the king of the eyesores? The rest of our lives would have failed. All the bakers adore, may cut off their thumbs and bleed into their buns till they're miles away. I'm looking in on the good life I might be doomed never to find. fine. And if you talk to me like I'd have danced like the queen of the eyesores the rest of our lives with a farewell.
Lisa Crawley, New Slang, now playing here in Auckland on the 18th of June at Big Fan. Head to Event Finder for tickets for that one. A rare moment to have Lisa back in Auckland, so you want to make the most of it. Check her out on YouTube with all her fabulous latest videos she's done live at Village Studios in Los Angeles. Still doing well. Now, Emma, I had the privilege today of seeing Once on Chanuk Bear out for company theatre out at the Rose Centre in Belmont. And I've got to be a little bit careful because I was there as a NAPTA judge, but tonight I'm here as a Kick Arts host, but thoroughly enjoyed it. Absolutely loved it. So I've got to be, I won't say too much other than I loved every second of it. So well done. So Paul, the director, is here tonight and welcome to the show. Paul, great to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be back. You guys are very kind to me.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like you're constantly doing something and quite big, meaty ones. You don't do the easy stuff.
Well, I like the challenge and I don't want to... I don't want to rest on my laurels. I want to be able to do things that challenge me constantly. Like with this show, I'm not going to lie. Two weeks out, I was asking myself, if I bit off a bit more than I could chew with this one. It was the hardest show I think
really?
I've ever tackled. I thought Cuckoo's Nest last year was, but this was about
what made this one hit that for you.
I think on a personal and emotional level, this is a kind of story that once you really get into the script and you don't see it on the first reading, but you get really getting into the lives of these men that we grow up knowing as these textbook figures from history that are kind of faceless, right? And then you start seeing these characters come to life and you realize that all of these people are real people and then it goes beyond just wanting to put on a great show. You go, am I gonna do justice to the story and in the lives of these people that actually have existed at some point? And it's this extra added layer of stress that I don't think I've ever felt in any other show. And then to make things worse, you saw the show, you saw what the set was like, and it's a very complicated set. And we were rehearsing on flat ground for 8 weeks. We had no idea whether or not this is going to even work from a staging perspective. So I literally had in rehearsals people blocking each other in my head, thinking that there'll be levels above each other and it'll be fine when we get there. So the adjustment... to the set took about 3 or 4 rehearsals for the guys just to feel comfortable with the set. But then in that final week, we remembered the rehearsals. Once we got comfortable in the space, everyone just stepped up and we started hitting the pace and the runs, you know.
So before we unpack the journey and the people you've brought with us, just for our listeners, if they don't know the story, tell us what's this play all about.
So, Once on Chanuk Bear is about the event that took place on August the 8th, 1915, where New Zealand pushed up Chanuk Bear, which is a pretty large hill in Turkey and Gallipoli. 3 battalions went up, led by Wellington, Auckland, Otago, sorry, 4 battalions, and Canterbury. Wellington made it up to the summit. 760 men were in that battalion. Of them, 70 made it back.
Wow.
And a large portion of them died by not just being killed by the Turkish soldiers, but by the British artillery that was being fired into Chanuk Bear, basically. So a lot of friendly fire. And it's remembered as one of the greatest sacrifices of young men in New Zealand's military history, but is also renowned worldwide as sort of the day that New Zealand was discovered as a nation by the rest of the world and really recognized for the heroics of Channing Bear. It's quite a powerful story.
Once they worked out it wasn't Australia.
Well, once they worked out they weren't Australians, yeah.
Yeah.
Magnificent Australians.
Yeah, Maurice Shadbolt wrote it, but is there verbatim bits in there, or is it very much his interpretation?
It's mostly his interpretation. My understanding is that the messages that they receive via Corporal Bassett, the signals linesman, those phone calls with the high command allegedly are actually what's recorded in history,
right?
And everything else is a dramatization.
Brilliant. All right, tell us, who did you bring along tonight from your cast? And full credit to them, Sunday night, and you've already done a show today, and we've dragged you out tonight. But who did you bring along?
I brought Carl Buckley, who plays our lead, Colonel Connolly.
And Carl.
Jordan Wallace-Leave, who plays Otaki George.
Brilliant. Welcome to the show, guys. And Jordan, we'll talk a little later about your sort of link to the story. But first of all, Carl, this is you're no stranger to this show, I hear.
No, I've directed a few productions of it. I directed one we were working it out, Paul, about 20 years ago.
Yeah, 22 years ago.
22 years ago, for Maringi Players, in their little theatre. So we built the set on their stage and, yeah.
What is it about this play that keeps bringing you back to it?
Well, I think Paul hit the nail on the head. It's the coming of age of New Zealand as a nation, but that's the big picture. The big picture of it, I guess, but the personal nature of it, the mateship, the camaraderie between the guys on the hill, the friendships formed, the battles between the personalities as well. So it's a really personal story, but with much bigger themes and bigger ideas. So yeah, I really have a love for the story. And when the opportunity came along, when I saw Paul was directing, it just seemed like fate. So yeah, it was great to.
And is it the first time you've played the Colonel's role?
Oh yeah, first time I've been in it. I've directed.
So
it
you've
twice.
Always directed, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I directed one of the other actors when I directed it for my school. Directed Connor in it. So it's been a coming together of a family.
And what's it been like stepping onto the stage? Because you must feel that, you know, you really know this character, having been on the other side of it for so long.
It's one of those, I guess. You don't really appreciate the work as a director. I'm not saying you, Paul, you're doing a great job. but yeah, the you don't really appreciate as a director the all that you have to put in, especially for Connolly. I think he doesn't come on till about halfway through Act One, but then he's on virtually for the whole rest of the play, and battling Sergeant Frank, it takes a lot out, and you know, working with some quite strong actors on stage as well, that means you have to, as the colonel on stage, keeping my respect of the men, and keeping that kind of authority over some quite strong personality, some strong actors, really is a bit of a challenge.
I mean, it was an interesting one to watch because there's, you know, there is a bit of a roller coaster where they have their nice, calm, quiet moments, but there's no gentle back up. Something happens and then, boom, the energy is up, the volume is up. It's quite intense. What was that like to sort of direct and maintain?
Yeah, the tonal shifts in the show are a puzzle. The thing is, I've got to give credit to the cast, because when we started the rehearsal process, I did say, guys, you need to have your lines down in 4 weeks to give us like 6 weeks of, just running every scene over and over and over again. And it's once the lines were in their bones, they kind of found it. And it's a lot easier to direct those tonal shifts once the lines are there and the characters are there. And because they've been booked down for like 5 or 6 weeks before we went on, they really understood every single scene. They understood what their character was going through, and other characters' journeys. And I hope it comes across when you know, you watch the show, but you really get to care for every single one of them. So every time something happens, it feels real because they do react together like a unit. And those quiet moments, like when they're reminiscing about Palliser Bay and Pai Kakariki Hill and having mullets and oysters for lunch, those moments is like, it's that calm before the storm with the brotherhood and going, this is where we could be. And then the next thing is right. We're in a war.
Snap straight back into it. Yeah. Do you know, the bit that got me was the letters in the pockets.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard this a bit through my own family and things. Yeah, it was like, wow. So, Jordan, who do you play?
Ōtaki George.
And you've got some links to this character?
Yes. Ōtaki George is largely attributed to being... I've blanked on the word, Brian, just in this moment, inspired by my great-great-uncle, Harding Waipuke Leaf, who fought in World War One and World War II. And he's got a big documentary on him because he was one of the Māori battalion soldiers that led people up that hill and survived. Yeah, it's called the Shark of War.
Talk about no pressure.
Yeah.
Representing the family in this way. What's that been like then? Because that is a different journey. Knowing that, you know, not only is this a true story, but it's got links back to your family.
It's been really good. So for the first part of like characterization, I do think about a lot with regards to just my currently alive koro.
Yeah.
My papa, just in the way that he behaves. He's had people who have learned of this history come up to him and say, "You look exactly like it, this character in this historical event." And he's a very kind of like, if you read through the lines of the thing, and if you knew this man, you'd know, like, he could just walk on set and just start doing it, up until the point where you put an audience in front of him. Then he'd get a bit shy. But that was, looking to him for inspiration for how I should play it has been really wonderful.
But your character brings quite an energy to the stage at just the right point too. Although I'm not sure what's Colonel's first impressions of this young man?
We had a bit of a chat about that in the rehearsal process, and being a colonel, Ōtaki comes on stage and has become separated from his unit, so whether that's deliberately or not, and so being a colonel, the character's point of view is really, he's almost deserted his duties, and so being a traditionalist, the colonel is quite upset about that. Until Ōtaki brings news about the other New Zealanders and where the other New Zealand battalions might be, and then it softens a little bit.
All male cast. What was that like working with?
A nightmare. Don't do it. It's such, when the testosterone levels are through the roof, and this is a very strong cast. I'm very blessed with the cast that I have, but when you have a strong cast like this, you also are dealing with a lot of alphas, and so
my bad.
But I will say this, this has been the best cast I've ever worked with for a variety of reasons. And one thing I'm going to say is everyone's been so respectful of each other's journeys and also of my direction of the piece. And everyone was right. We're going to do what you tell us. We're going to trust you. And they found their characters. They followed directions so well. There was no arguments about virtually anything. There was some discussions here and there about how something should be portrayed, but generally speaking, it's been it's been a dream to work with these guys, because honestly, you know what directing plays is like, and you're having to people management is half the issue, and this has actually been a really cool process, and I'm surprised I felt intimidated at the start that this is all guys, and I had no idea how it's going to go, and also a little bit intimidated by having Kyle in the room, because he directed me in this 22 years ago, and I had no idea he wanted to do this play. He just reached out just before the auditions and said, "Paul, I'm going to come audition." And for me, I thought, "Oh man, he better be good."
Yeah, awkward.
Yeah,
sorry.
and then I was worried about that. And then he came in and read, and he just blew everyone else out of the water. And so I cast him, and then I thought, "Oh man," and he's directed it heaps of times, but he not once during any of the rehearsals came up to me and gone, "Do you know what? I would have done it this way." He was very, very respectful of the director's chair as well. So it's been great. Great bunch of boys and phenomenal actors. And some actors who are sort of younger coming through how much they've grown over this process in ability and how far they've pushed themselves to really deliver has been incredible to watch. I'm really proud of this cast and this show.
And there's quite a number of them too that you have worked with before. So, I mean, obviously you've said Carl was your director, but it's amazing how many of these guys have followed you either from Titirangi or Playhouse.
Yeah, I make friends easy. I'm very fortunate that there's a bunch of really good guys. Jordan, one of them, of course. Michael Hallows, Jack Hanrahan. Just trying to remember everyone that's in it. And then I've got Jared, Abel playing Porky, Hamish Davis, Scott Cutler, of course, and Daniel Rundle. But one of the coolest things about this show, actually, is that Scott, who plays Holy, he was in Cuckoo's Nest, and he also did Cripple of Inishman last year. But Sam is his son.
Oh, that's cool.
And we needed, more young men, and so he brought his 17-year-old son, Sam, in. And one of my biggest joys watching the play is seeing the moments between the two of them. And it's something that you very rarely see, where you've got both father and son, phenomenal actors, sharing these really lovely, quiet moments that... for me, on a personal level, is really cool.
And just how cool for them. I mean, that's something you'll never forget. I did have to have Jack on. I did send him a text afterwards, because we interviewed him here only a little while ago, and he was taking a big break, not coming back on for anything for a while, and there he was on stage, and he plays multiple roles, and I text him saying, "Well, I'm never taking you into war, because every time you come on stage, you're getting shot and dead. He died several times in your show. You just killed him off. That's one way to force him to have a break."
Yeah, well, it was funny because, I remember speaking to Jack about this. I'm like, "Look, man, we need this role filled, but it's okay because there's no lines to remember. You just come in, you die, and then you come in, and then you kind of die slowly, and then you come in for the final scene, and you've got some dialogue there, but that's only five lines, so not a lot to learn, and you can really help us out." And he was like, "What are the dates?" And I gave him the dates, and he went, "I'll miss one rehearsal," and that's fine.
And that's true friends in theatre. Do you know what I did love? Jack was one who was dead right from the start, and it was your young guy, wasn't it, who's dead on the right, stage left at the start for quite some time.
Me.
Oh, it's you.
That's him.
Well done. Is... the position you were in from the audience, we were absolutely certain it was a mannequin until you got lifted up. And I was like, "Holy hell, someone's been in that position for that long. Full credit to you." Because I was actually staring going, "Is he breathing it?" Nah. Jack, I knew. So I knew he was alive.
I fell asleep today. I 100.
Well, that'll be why you were so still. Perfect. Perfect opportunity to fall asleep. I mean, you don't have lines to learn. You get picked
up.
That'll wake you up.
There we go.
As long as you don't get a fright when someone picks you up and do the sound, that would have been great.
I wake up like this. People can't see, but I just open my eyes eerily.
So you mentioned coming onto that set and practicing. And for our listeners, it's how many levels? It felt like about six.
So five height levels. And were kind of treated a little bit like a musical stage, where we had part A, part B, part C of the stage, and there was 1, 2, 3, yeah, 4, and 5. So yeah, 5 different levels of height. And
then I guess running off into the wings at speed at that height, there's obviously a way down there as well.
That's
something you can't practice in rehearsal.
No.
All right, how many people tripped up in the first rehearsal?
I tripped up during a show.
Oh no, yeah. Because it's a decent height jump, each one. It's not a simple step.
Mm. Yeah, surprisingly, there wasn't really that many trips. We did everything on at 50% to begin with, and we've just been really fortunate, touch wood, that we haven't actually had any serious problems with anyone tripping or falling or anything like that. But yeah, there was one show where Jordan tripped on one of the sandbags coming off stage, and he kind of fell off stage, but luckily he was totally fine.
Broke the gun. They had to fix it.
The machine gun that was built for us. Yeah. But we fixed it same night.
What's it like honoring a story like this? I'll ask all of you, you know, whether it's as director or as a character, knowing that this is a true story.
I think there's a weight on us a little bit. You can't take too much license. You can't play for laughs, which you wouldn't do. But there are some funny parts in the story.
Mm.
Some funny little
scenes. Lovely light moments. Yeah,
yeah. Which you need to balance the more serious sides of things. So you are always aware that you're telling the story of these guys who did this, as Paul said, 760 went up and 70 came down. I think there's a real sense amongst all of us, amongst the crew and everything, that we're telling a serious story.
Hmm. Yeah, I feel that. It's because my character, a lot of their lines could be really, like, easily interpreted into just being played for laughs. But obviously, I want to do a lot of justice to the character and to, obviously, my great-great-uncle and to the story in itself. So I very much try and limit how much I'm doing that and take it with a bit of, like, really focus on the characterization so that I know that I'm getting it right, both in terms of tone and in how, in honor.
Mm.
But yeah, it's been quite easy kind of getting there with everyone around us.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the biggest thing with this is that I feel World War One is kind of getting forgotten a little bit. When I went to school in the early 2000s, it was very much part of the curriculum, learning about Gallipoli and Chanuk Bear. And there's a number of our cast haven't heard of Chanuk Bear.
Mm.
The younger cast, when they first auditioned for the show, they knew it was something to do with World War, with a World War, but they didn't know if it was World War II or World War I. And I think, for me, it's not to forget that World War I, on many levels, while is often overshadowed by World War II, but World War I has never seen, up to that point, the world has never really known or seen this new industrialized killing machine of what the military has become with the artillery and automatic machine guns and all of that kind of stuff, where the tactics that were being used were sending troops in single file fashion just to be shot down by machine guns. And they used those tactics well into 1916 and 1917. They started to change how they were doing things. And for me, it's been kind of on a bigger level about people wanting to play a small part in helping people not just remember, but maybe learn from the show and learn a little bit about the history and encourage them to go and do a bit of research, go to the Auckland Museum or something, spend some time there. And so I guess from my perspective, I just didn't want to disappoint the veterans that would be coming to see the show, and I just wanted them to watch it and appreciate it and feel like we have done it justice, and that's what...
Well, there was a lady next to me who I would have said was probably maybe late 80s, maybe 90, sitting on her own, completely on her own. And when you do your first charge up off to the battlefield, so to speak, and you freeze in that beautiful lighting, and I just looked at her and she just had just tears rolling down her eyes, and I thought, yep, they've done their job. You know, and you're honouring a story that you can move people in their way. All right, let's take a music break now, and then we're going to chat a little bit about your own arts journey that led up to today. Another new track from Kiwi Music. It's Beth Alston, and it's Haunts You. Haunts You, part of New Zealand Music Month. If you've got some great music you'd like us to play, email us info@kickarts.org.nz.
Or more to the point, yes, if you know someone else has got some great, yes, music, you can dob them in,
send it through.
Kiwis tend not to tell us.
That's how we've had some of our best bands in here.
Yeah.
It's some auntie who's keen, who sends us an email going, these kids are playing in the backyard and come and have a listen.
And it's coming up to that time again with Smoke Free and different, you know, Show Quest and Band Quest and all of those things. Like, there must be bands out there,
yeah,
doing competitions.
Yep.
Tell us.
Come on the show. Now, speaking of which, you do need to get in nice and early. We're booked a good 6 to 8 weeks in advance at the moment, so we hate saying no to people. So make sure you email us, info@kickarts.org.nz. If you've got something coming on anywhere in the country, we would love to chat to you. Now, back to our fabulous guests in the studio. And now I want to ask your arts journey. And, Carl, you mentioned teaching. So is drama teaching?
No. I'm a year 7 teacher, so
yeah.
I teach intermediate school, but I teach the high school at Orewa College, so I get the opportunity to work with some of the senior students on school productions and things like that, so that's taken quite a lot of my directing time and energy over the past few years. We, before that, and in between, I've directed a few shows. Last year I directed Noises Off for Centre Stage Theatre, and I have been on stage further back in my theatrical life, but kind of directing has taken over more of my time more recently, so it was a nice opportunity to jump in to Once on Janet Bear. I think I worked it out. It was about 10 years since I was last on stage. So,
and did you say you directed school kids into this play?
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that like?
That was about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more. It's a challenge. I've got this theory that if you're doing things with school kids, you need to break it down, because this is essentially one big story. It's not broken down into smaller scenes. It's two acts, but it's a real challenge for kids to learn, because it's just so much. So that would be a learning curve. That was a learning curve for me. But yeah, so directed Paul about 20 years ago in it, and then directed high school at Orewa College, directed their senior drama kids in it about 10, 12 years ago.
I imagine that would have been really moving for parents to see teenagers play all of these roles as well, because there would be that double level of them understanding a bit of history.
Yeah. Some of the teachers who were around when I directed it still talk about it. Still talk about it. We did it, scaled it down. We didn't do it in the hall. We did in the drama room. Very small scale, but very intense, very accessible to the audience. You know, the audience was right there, no getting away from it. So I think that's how this show works really well, and the Rose Centre is kind of perfect for that, because it's got the raked seating and that mirrors the rake of the stage, and so the audience, especially at the back, are looking across this kind of valley to where the action's taking place. So it's quite good.
Do you remember the first thing back in the day that sort of got you into the arts? That very first moment that you went, oh, this is something I want to do?
Well, I mean, Jordan will tell you that, you know, it was way back in the 1900s.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jordan rags on me a little bit for my age. But the, I mean, it was youth theatre, drama classes at Maringi Players back in the 1980s. Thank you, Jordan. It was that, and then they have really strong youth theatre and youth productions, and then I got into directing the youth productions, and then got into senior shows, and they often did shows at the Palm House and at the Rose Centre as well, so that kind of got me hooked in.
Look, the 80s were good times. He doesn't know what he's missing.
Yeah.
He strikes me as someone who would have been quite fun in the 80s.
He wasn't a mullet.
Yeah, it would have fitted him perfectly.
So, Jordan, what about your arts journey? When did it kick off for you?
Well, I've been doing background acting for several years, but the first time I was actually in a theatre production was in Cuckoo's Nest with Paul, where I just played one of the aides. And it was simply because my partner at the time, they were like, we need people for these roles. And so then she was like, go, just go.
How hard can it be? Yeah.
It was a lot of fun working with Paul. I didn't really work with him much on it, because my lines were, get out from there, back inside. But, you know, I did really enjoy the experience and then going on stage. And I'd been thinking about doing more things, but I'd just been too busy up until the point where he contacted me, got me into it. And I've been really enjoying it so far, working with someone as ancient as Carl, real dinosaur, like a staple in the theatre.
So did you know the link to your family for you to reach out, or was that a coincidence that came out after?
No, that came out after.
Really?
Yeah, because I said to Jordan, look, I need, like, come and audition and stuff like that, and Jordan did, and I gave him the part, and then, like, a day or two later, he sends me a text message out of the blue, and it's just a photograph of a soldier from World War One, and screenshots from the Auckland Online Museum about his great uncle. And I was reading that, and I'm like, why did he send me this? As I'm reading it, it's like I notice a similarity in the name, and then the part of the article that said why Pukki Leaf was thought to be the inspiration behind the character of Otaki George and Maurice Shadbolt's Once in Chanuk Beer. And I had shivers. Mm. And I gave him a call straight away. And the first thing I said to him, like, mate, you cannot tell anyone about this.
I think I was on the toilet when he gave me that call. I don't know if I told him.
That's probably more information than we needed, yeah. But that's okay.
And it was something that I teased the guys with basically throughout the whole rehearsal period, saying there's something really unique about the show that is unlikely to ever be repeated in a future production, and you guys should feel really honored to be part of this specific show. And then we kind of let the cat out of the bag. I think it was on the first dress rehearsal, and there was...
Oh, wow, you kept it till then.
Yeah, we managed to keep it quiet until then, and it was...
That was a struggle for me, keeping it quiet.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talked about it, and then Carl piped in that he actually knew my uncle way back when, in 1912.
You had me for a second there.
I was like, what?
How do you direct him?
do you know
really
what?
Well.
He's really good in the room. He's really good in the room. The second he's out of the room and backstage, you just have to go, okay, dude, just relax.
Yeah. Yeah. Hands off. Yeah.
Yeah, but he is, I mean, he jokes and stuff, but
I do what I'm told.
But he is superb to work with. And he never argues. He applies all the directions so well. He's a real joy to work with.
Good to hear, but I bet you he's the one that goes to the props table and messes with it. Would I be right? Look, see, guilty.
100%.
We've been doing this so long, Emma, we know.
I've been told it three times.
We know. Paul, we're nearly out of time, so rather than your journey in the past, because we've talked about it, what's in the horizon for you? Or is there, you know, you've done some big name shows lately, is there something that you're going, please, if someone wants to produce XYZ, I really want to do it next? Like, how do you top this one?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's always Amadeus. Would love to do Amadeus.
Ooh, yes.
It scares people.
Yeah.
Similar to, it's one of those plays like 12 Angry Men, 12 Angry Jurors. It's one of those plays that you kind of need to find a cast for, and it needs to be perfect. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything about it has to be perfect. So Amadeus, some more Martin McDonagh. Love my Martin McDonagh plays. I was really hoping to do The Graduate in the next couple of years, but I know I think Dolphin is putting it on, so I'm probably going to leave that one for 3 or 4 years before giving that a go. But yeah.
Oh, Amadeus, definitely.
Amadeus, would love to do Amadeus. Anyone listening?
Yeah.
Want to give me a call, talk about it? Would love to have a chat.
Brilliant. What do you look forward to in your final week this week?
As in...
Show-wise, going into your final week of shows, you know, I guess, you know, is there something you're drawing on to get through? Because you give a lot of energy out.
I mean, right now the guys have just done such a phenomenal job, and the show is really flying. I rarely... I'm very honest in self-reflection and quality of a performance, whether it's my own or another one that I'm watching. I have to say, I give the guys right now a 9 out of 10 with where they're at. And that's the highest I ever score any show. I never give anything a 10 out of 10. And I just keep saying to them, just keep doing what you're doing. Keep growing how you're growing. Keep it clean. Let's try to find that perfect show. But I've not been disappointed with them once this season. Every show that I've seen, I would have been happy if that was the quality for the rest of the run. So I think sky's the limit, and I think they'll definitely get to it.
Where can people grab tickets for this week?
They're available on iTicket. We've got four nights left, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Student tickets are actually quite cheap. They're $15 for students, and adult tickets are $30, which, again, is actually quite cheap for theatre at the moment. I know a lot of places are $35, $40+.
And it's easy to get to, and it's easy parking.
Oh.
No other stress. Come in, and there's a nice cup of tea and a bicky waiting for you at halftime. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us again. Congratulations on a great show. Enjoy the rest of your season, and thanks for coming in on a Sunday night, and stop messing with the props. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate it. Now, Emma, you're zipping away and may just make it back in time next week.
Yeah, hopefully. Down to Queenstown for an intensive with my Hadestown cast down there at Wakatipu, and to see the closing night of 9 to 5 with Showbiz Queenstown, which I can't wait to see.
That will be awesome. Well, hopefully.
And you and I are hitting Laser Kiwis on Tuesday night.
Tuesday. We'll go and check that one out for the Comedy Festival. Well, finishing off our New Zealand Music Month this week with Call Me Back, Babe from Liberty. Have a fabulous week, and make sure you
kick some arts.
The number you have dialed is not available. Please leave your message after the beep.
Late last September, you probably don't remember. You were standing at the bar, I was watching from afar. 8 months of bliss, how do we come to this? Big screen in my head, it haunts me every time that I'm alone in my bed. Call me back,
I just wanna talk.
My God, they almost hate me, 'cause I talk about you all the time, but you're all that's on my damn mind. Sitting in my room alone, calling straight to answer phone, leaving us to try the tone. So now I'm overthinking every little thing that I said. I'm watching my regrets on the big screen in my head. Every time that I'm alone in my bed, you call me back.
I still love you.
Your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live same time under the stars, saying blah 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 blah. Let's go kick some